What do I mean by dark arts? Myself as a player, if I got contact in box, I'm going down. It's not diving. It was a foul on Will. He tried to stay up because he was honest. So sometimes you get punished for being a nice guy.
Join in the obsession. Subscribe now at offtheball.com/join.
The Koigig Pod on Off The Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.
Katie McCabe, a huge, huge goal.
I'm very proud of the team's performance.
We're going to go out there to beat them. We're going to try and beat them.
Hello, I am Karen Duggan and welcome to the Koigig Pod. And we've decided after Kathleen's ridiculous decision to exclude Emma Byrne from our OTB Mount Rushmore last week that we've decided just to bin her off to, you know, put her in the bowl corner for a week. We may or may not let her back depending on how much editing our producer Catherine has to do with me in the presenter seat today. But luckily I am joined by Her Sports, Alana Canan. So Alana, last week we recorded the podcast in a slight state of shock. You know, some people would say it was an unfavorable group. Some people would say group of death. That's our Euro 2025 qualifiers. Just to remind people, we have France, England and Sweden in that. So our initial reaction was kind of like, oop. But then it turned to the fixtures and where we would play these games, which we, of course, know now. And we're heading back to the Aviva, which is fantastic.
We are, Karen, yeah, on two occasions as well. So I suppose that's something that we all wanted to see. Didn't know if it was going to happen. The unfortunate thing is, though, as you know yourself, like these games are on a Tuesday and a Friday, respectively. So we mightn't get the, I suppose, groundbreaking sellout crowd that we would have wanted, especially for the England game. But yeah, definitely good to see them back there. And I think probably one of the talking points as well is the third game against France. I know in the press release they had said that the venue of that would be released at a later date. But I suppose that leaves it open to interpretation. It probably mightn't be at Tallaght Stadium. I know Shamrock Rovers have some Champions League games around that time. So maybe that's an opportunity in itself to get this team around the country a bit.
Yeah, I think a lot of people would love to kind of see it move somewhere else down the country. Although, like Dublin, to be fair, it is always going to draw the biggest crowds with respect to everywhere else. And yeah, you were kind of saying the Tuesday night is a thing. The only thing I think is that I think there will be a lot of transfer from the men's supporters over to the women's for this one game, given that it is England are the opposition, and they certainly won't want to be a shortened voice in the Aviva for that game. I think that obviously we'll need everything we can, and the 12th man in the crowd will be a huge one for that. Another thing I saw on Twitter is people weren't overly happy with England putting our fixture in Carrow Road, and I kind of wanted to get your thoughts on that, because I mean it's still a 27,000 seater, but I do think that because of, you know, the contingent and of Irish in London, we kind of were hoping that it would be that, just ease of access, ease of transport, just the expats already being over there in the crowd that they would bring. Were we getting ahead of ourselves on that? Are England kind of saying as well, you know, these are the smallest group, it's a chance for us to bring it, or this, sorry, we're the minnows of the group, we'll say, and it's a chance for us to bring our games around the country. Do you think they're viewing it like that?
Yeah, I definitely think the second point there, Karen, because, I mean, if you're looking at it from the English point of view, they're probably expecting that the other two will get massive crowds. Now, that's not to say the Ireland game wouldn't. I know a lot of people are saying they'd love the Wembley day out and maybe would head over. Like, we see week in, week out, Irish fans going over to see WSL games. So why wouldn't they then for the England game, I guess? But yeah, I suppose Carrow Road, not what people were expecting. I know Kathleen had up the best airport to fly into. So there is still an opportunity for people to do that. And yeah, we'll have to sell it out now and prove a point.
Yeah, no, it's great. It kind of adds to the excitement now, knowing that we will be in the Aviva and those games to look forward to. Obviously starting off with France away is, you know, it's not the easiest one, but none of them would be, I guess, if you were hoping you'd maybe start with Sweden at home, just to, because we've done okay against them before. But whoever we started off with, it was always going to be a difficult one. But something certainly to look forward to, and hopefully everyone has those dates in the diary now, particularly that home one with the Aviva. I want everyone out in full voice. And so we have a strong start to the campaign and hopefully do what no one thinks can be done and cause some sort of upset. Speaking of upsets, we kicked off our domestic league, the Women's Premier Division. It's getting used to calling it that now. It's always going to be the WNL to me. But that kicked off this week. And yeah, you can't really tell what's going to happen from the first game of the season, but there were some interesting results, Alana. What stuck out to you?
Just a few anyways, yourselves included, obviously the 2-0 win over Cork City, and you're on the score sheet again, Kurt.
Yeah, so that's probably the biggest surprise of the weekend. Yeah.
I didn't mean that now, but more so to the point, I suppose, even on Twitter, I think we'll have to check your birth cert. You're just Captain Karen Duggan everywhere at this stage. It's extending everywhere, but yeah, great result for you down in Turner's Cross. 2-0 was a bit of a, I suppose, running team throughout the rest of the fixtures too. Bowes bet Wexford 2-0. Galway starting off against Athlone 2-0. Shamrock Rovers and DLR Waves 1-1. That would have been another one people weren't really expecting, I guess. And then Shells, a 0-0 draw with Sligo Rovers. So I think if anything, it says what everybody was thinking before we kicked off, Karen, that this is probably the most competitive Women's National League or Women's Premier Division even that we've had today.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that that's very evident. Particularly the Shelburne Sligo result for me stood out. We know that Shelburne will go from strength to strength, but it does take time to bed in when you have so many new players coming now. I think they will be very strong and we're very cautious going into that game next week because we know that they'll be on the bounce after that. They had a lot of possession by all accounts, but fair play to Sligo for standing their ground there because it's a really, really difficult place to go. So to come out of there at a point, it's a really positive start for a team like Sligo going into the season. You know, they had some heavy defeats at times, but it's going to breed a lot of confidence into them. Similarly with DLR, even in their preseason, maybe weren't picking up great results, but to, again, stand up to a team like Shamrock Rovers was huge. We were obviously really happy to get points on the board, given how the President's Cup had gone. You know, we were completely overrun in that game. And just to see a marked improvement on performance was good. And I think we definitely needed that for our own psyche. And then I said it before the season, Galway are my dark horse. I said it at the end of last season. I wasn't playing the time we played them down in Galway in Salt Hill. So I was watching from the sidelines. And they're so well drilled. They're so well trained. They're so fit and young. And they're definitely a team that are going to challenge this year. And I think they've already proven that by going to Athlone, probably the hardest place to go. They bring a brilliant crowd, a loud crowd, massive AstroTurf pitch. And they're also tactically very, very astute under Kieran Kilduff. So for Galway to go away and pick up those 3 points, I think is huge. And definitely, I think people will be watching Galway more so this season than ever before.
Yeah, I think so too. And especially, I remember I was listening to yourself, actually, I can't remember, was it on Coigig or Off the Ball over the last few weeks, but you were saying maybe themselves and Athlone are the ones that you guys would be very cautious of. Mm-hmm. Do you think we'll see an expansion? So obviously, usually for those tuning in, like Women's Premier Division, there's usually a top three or four, then there's sort of a middle section and then a bottom three. I think this season we could probably see a bit of a blurring of the lines there between those because there is just so many teams that are stacked and ready to compete.
Yeah, I think there's guaranteed to be a shift, and I'd include Treaty climbing up on that. Obviously, they're a bit of an unknown entity because a lot of the players have come in from abroad, but given the work that they've put in, since Kieran McCormick has come in, they'll be certainly add something interesting to the league. A lot of Bowes picked up a lot of really good players as well. So, yeah, I think there's going to be a shift in what we've seen from the traditional teams. And not that I want to see that because Piemont have always been in the mix and we'd hope to be again. But I'm just looking at the strength and depth of some of those squads. And, you know, you're a bit like, oh, there could be a changing of the guard this year. So we'll see. I think, again, it just brings more eyes to the game. I think Galway United, great club, always have great support. Athlone have shown that they're bringing that into the league. Hopefully, again, more transfer of the Bohemian supporters will go that way as well. Just going from strength to strength and more surprises to come. And I guess that's what the neutral wants, not what I want, but that is what the neutral wants. So given that it is an FA Cup weekend, we have no team of the week with Emma Carroll, but we will be back momentarily with Goal's Amy Rushguy to look at the four quarterfinals that we did have to watch this weekend. So it was, of course, an FA Cup weekend with four quarterfinal fixtures to be won. So in order to pick through them, we have been joined by Goal.com's lead football writer, Amy Rushguy. Amy, thanks for joining Alana and I today. So we have four big games and we had a couple of expected results and then a couple of surprises. So I'll let you pick which game surprised you the most.
I mean, it's going to be the Spurs game, right? Spurs,
yeah.
Manchester City on penalties. It kind of looked like it was kind of a nothing game, actually, when you watched it, when Manchester City took the lead. I think it was 6 minutes, and then you were just sort of like, well, this will just be business now, and just sort of descended into a bit of chaos for Man City. And yeah, what a second cup exit in 4 days. It's been a pretty tough week for them.
Yeah, it was interesting because, like you say, you expect them to kick on Mary Fowler, you know. It was kind of an easy enough goal and it was going the pattern that you thought it would. But Spurs came out in the second half and you could kind of argue that they were nearly the better team. And do you think they were worth that 96th minute equaliser?
Yeah,
I mean, just put it down to terrible defending. For anyone who didn't see it, there was a complete mix up at the back between centre back and keeper, and it just left Bethany England straight through on goal. But I would say that they were probably worth that.
Yeah, no, I agree. I think, well, Beth England will have been delighted that that fell in her lap, because a few minutes earlier she should have scored. She was about 7 yards out and the chance fell to her, and she just blazed it over the bar, and that was quite uncharacteristic. But I think it was just strange. I mean, the first half City were good. They were okay, like they were fine. They were good for their lead anyway. And then the second half just not kicking on. And then Spurs sort of realized the opportunity was there for the taking, right? And really put the pressure on them. And yeah, I mean, they deserved the goal. City were hanging on towards the end. And yeah, like I say, Beth England probably should have scored before, but she wasn't going to miss that one in a million years.
No, and obviously we spoke a good bit when Emma Byrne was on the podcast, but Alana, do you think that Keating's mess up for the goal would have been still playing on her mind when it came to the penalty shootout, or do you think that they were just better penalties that Spurs took?
I think a mix of both. Like, I know we've talked before how good Keating has been this season, so I suppose that's a disappointing moment for her. But within that, like, she was left absolutely stranded for the goal. So I think there was very little that she could do at that point. You know, that would have been a significant blow. But during the penalties as well, there were some great penalties by Spurs. And then even on the City side of things, people who you would have expected to score, Greenwood, Chloe Kelly, the likes, you would have expected them to score and they just couldn't. Spencer coming out on top there. So I suppose a bit of a mix of both in that capacity. And yeah, probably a bit of a shock result out of all of them. The ones people would have expected to see, you'd imagine, would be Chelsea and City coming through the strongest. And yeah, we won't see them in the final. Tottenham would have to go on and prove their worth now in the coming games as well.
Yeah, and Amy, do you think that these cup exits are a huge concern for Gareth Taylor? Or do you think that he's looking at his squad now and seeing the position that they're in the league and saying, this is the one we want. Do you think that any of that played into the team this week, that they were a little bit subpar in those cup games because their eye is on the big prize in the league?
I think maybe on Sunday the Chelsea game played into it a little bit. I mean, when you watched the Chelsea game, obviously a couple of hours earlier, they were poor. They were, you know, they rode their luck a fair bit as well. And, you know, they'd only played, 4 days earlier in a really, really intense game between those two. So I think that probably played a part in both of them being quite poor on Sunday. Yeah. I was surprised at Taylor's subs, to be honest. I thought that I mean, they came a little bit later than I expected. And I think when Spurs were really piling the pressure on, I was surprised that he didn't turn to his bench and, you know, try and just disrupt their rhythm a little bit. You know, Chloe Kelly came on right at the end before extra time. You know, could she have come on in the 82nd minute, for example?
It did make a difference, yeah.
Yeah, she made a difference.
Going to, yeah.
Yeah, but even just to bring her on, to slow the game down, to, you know, that player time waste a little bit coming off, and then, you know, it just breaks up Spurs' play and just stops their momentum a bit. It just felt like, you know, they had their backs against the wall a little bit, and you were looking and thinking, do you want to make another sub? But I suppose it's sort of hanging on, is it going to go to extra time and things like that? You know, do I want to make my subs now? But yeah, it was just sort of, there wasn't really anything that City did to stem the flow, I didn't think, towards the end of the game. I mean, if they go on and win the league, then it's kind of all a moot point, right? Because that's the big one. And it's kind of like, well, this was a successful season because we won the league. But, you know, if they don't go on and win it, and they've gone out in the semi-finals of the Cup to Chelsea, which is no disgrace, they've missed an opportunity really against Spurs 1-0 up early on, and then don't win the league, then you kind of, you go back to this. And I guess hindsight's a beautiful thing, but yeah, I mean, it's a tough week, and you'd hope, well, Taylor will hope that they kind of use this as to fire themselves up, right? Not to get down on themselves.
Yeah, because at the end of the day, like, I've been in that position before where you do prioritise the league, but then when you get into the game, you're like, oh, I do want to win this, I do want to do that. And anytime you lose, it knocks you a little bit. So Taylor will be hoping that he can park that and, you know, just fully get City's focus on the league. But we should probably also talk about the progression of Spurs and their style of play this year. It's their first time in an FA Cup semi-final. And, you know, some of the results earlier in the season in the league were a bit bonkers because they were employing a new style of play. But since then, they've kind of been a little bit less gung-ho against those top teams and have learned to play against them a lot better. Alana, have they impressed you?
Yeah, definitely, Karen. I think they've come on, as you say, leaps and bounds. And even just like you're saying there, first FA Cup semi-final for them, and then also the first time they've defeated Man City since 2021. So they'll take progression out of that, just as we were saying that Man City might take this as an opportunity to kind of look back on and bounce on from. Spurs will be looking to do that too. So yeah, they really impressed there at the weekend, and even just like taking the opportunities when they're coming to them, because like you say, much of that game was a bit of a dead rubber. You thought City had it wrapped up, even though it was 1-0, they were on top for much of it, and then to come back in and keep knocking at the door when the momentum swung down to go on and win it, I think they'll take great confidence out of that.
Yeah, Amy, what do you think the difference has been from the start of the year to where Spurs are now? Is it just discipline, or is it obviously just getting used to the new style of play?
I think they just have, like, they've just got used to it, and it's just sort of, he's come in, obviously, and put his ideas in, and it's been about just taking time to adapt to those ideas.
Yeah.
I don't think you can rush something like that so much. I think it's quite exciting for Spurs as well, because you can tell they haven't really figured out their attack yet. Like, with Beth England on the bench, you know, can they kind of play her and Martha Thomas together, or do they need to play one or the other, or...
I think with the talent of the two of them, you find a way to fit them both in. But
yeah,
and again, maybe it just takes time to build that partnership. But given that they're already safe now in the WSL, maybe this is something they should be looking towards before they go into the semi-final, because, you know, their confidence levels will be up, and we'll see what way the draw goes, because the other team in the for their first ever semi-final is Leicester, who had a 2-0 win over Liverpool. I mean, the pretty evenly matched game, you would have to say. What do you think was the difference that got Leicester over the line in this one, Amy?
Well, I think that first goal makes all the difference. And I think when Matt Beard will have watched that back on analysis, he'll have been, and the players as well, will have just been disappointed that that is the way they've conceded. Because if you watch it, Rantala kind of sneaks in. I think there's three Liverpool players in the picture, yeah, as the shot hits the post, and then she's the one reacting completely out of picture, runs past, I think, two Liverpool defenders, past the three already in the picture to get the ball. And it's just sort of like, she's the one of the six that's on her toes. And that must be, like, when they watch it back, they must think, how disappointing,
yeah,
that.
And yeah, even in the build-up, there was a lot of, like, just sloppy kind of, yeah, play. There was a lot of just balls hitting off each other. But when they fall for you, they fall for you. And then you had Herbinger for Liverpool hitting the post. And it was kind of just one of those days for Liverpool. But I think, again, on the balance of things, you couldn't say that Leicester didn't deserve it, Alana.
Yeah, definitely. And then on the Liverpool side of things, like you're saying, Matt Beard did try to change it up, you know, putting on the fresh legs, but it just didn't, as I say, fall for them. They're without a home win now since November as well. So maybe that's something they need to look at, I suppose, being able to attack on the front foot, because while they had the ball for a lot of this game, they just couldn't capitalise on it. And that was really to their downfall there at the weekend.
Yeah, so that's Liverpool out of the cup. I think they would have loved another game in the cup. They're still kind of in that battle with Manchester United for fourth place. Do you think that this loss will affect them in any way, Amy? Or likewise, do you think Man United's win in this will spur them on to do better things in the league as well?
Yeah, I mean, I think Matt Beard is quite good at kind of just, you know, picking his players up and making them go again. I mean, they've had a great season. They've probably gone under the radar a little bit. You know,
I'm a Man United fan and I can feel them. I feel, and we have a lot of Liverpool supporters that listen to the pod as well, and they're very happy with how Liverpool have been performing this season.
It does just feel they had a really good transfer window and they've kind of embedded the players well. They had that foundation from last season. It feels like they're onto something really good there. I think it is a shame because it's a kind of a missed opportunity, because I mean, both teams, Leicester and Liverpool, will have looked at that game and thought, God, this is a really good opportunity for us. Do you know, they're not coming up against Chelsea or Man City or Arsenal or anything, so they'll be disappointed. But I think, you know, they've been great in the league this year, and you know, I think they'll be able to carry that on. And for Man United, I think that's exactly what Manchester United needed this weekend, just a, you know, a 4-0 blowout. Just
yeah, after and some time. More so even than the result, was it the performance that impressed you from Man United this week? So Man United were 4-0 winners over Brighton, comprehensive scoreline, but also a comprehensive performance by them.
Yeah, I think they just needed that. I think they just went out and were like, right, you know, kind of let's get everything out of our system from the last couple of weeks, and you know, let's not mess. This is the one competition that's left, really. You know, Champions League is near on impossible at this point. You know, title race is gone, Conte Cup gone, so it's like FA Cup. This is, you've got to put all your eggs in this basket now and go for it. And you know, they just need a couple more performances like that. I mean, they can still salvage something from this season. And yeah, I mean, I think they just look brighter. I don't know if it's the weight of pressure lifting. It's like, you know, you've not really got much to do except play for pride in a way, but go out and try to get to that next round. So it'll be interesting to see how they do kick on the rest of the season, because it does feel like, they've got to put all their eggs in this basket now.
Yeah, Alana, you'd agree with that.
Yeah, especially after the last Arsenal and drawn with West Ham, they really needed this. And I suppose, yeah, like you're saying, they can't really, they're in the contention for fourth in the WSL, but there's not a whole lot else to play for. So they'll definitely be looking to add a trip to Wembley to that to sweeten things up come the end of the season, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, for a club like Man United, we expect them, based on the resources they have, to kick on. Some of the transfers that they got haven't quite been as prolific maybe as we thought, but I thought Mallard was quite good this weekend. She was involved in an awful lot, and you know, she was unlucky not to get a couple of goals. But they've really turned to Nikita Paris, has really been kind of the main bright light for them in the past couple of months. And yeah, I do think that they'll go all out for the FA Cup, and that will be the right thing to do. But Amy, in your opinion, for Man United to break into that top three, who are so obviously a little level above them this season, is it a strong transfer window? Is it a shake-up in terms of management? Is that even on the cards? Or is it just getting people playing better together?
I mean, it's a big summer. They've got some players out of contract, the manager out of contract, the new ownership coming in. So it's hard. I think it's hard to say with the new ownership coming in, like, they're going to have to decide what direction we're taking this team in. Do we need a new manager and so on and so forth? But I think I did a piece on Man United earlier this season and went back and looked at a lot of the transfers, and there's so many transfers in the last couple of years that have just kind of come in, done nothing and moved on. And, you know, they were a good half a dozen of players that you bring in that just don't really have an impact, and then they move on. And
be
it's
a bit
like,
of a theme between the men's team and the women's team, unfortunately.
It's just one of those things. I mean, I know you can't get every single transfer right, but it's just, yeah, the fact that sort of players have come in and just not even worked out. There are players that, as I was going through the signings, was like, I don't think I ever even saw that player play. Like, you know, it's just things like that that you can't afford to be. When you're the team that's chasing the established top three, you can't afford to have that many misses. Whereas, you know, if you look at Chelsea, they could afford to have a few misses because they're already, you know, top dog. I think if you're the chasing pack, you have to be almost one step ahead. And like when you're playing when the lesser team plays a bigger team and they say you almost have to be perfect to win, it's kind of like that. You have to be so much better and so much sharper to kind of bridge the gap that's built over time. And it is just about the owners need to figure out who the manager is to lead them through that and so on.
Yeah, that's a great little segue to talk about Chelsea. To be fair to Chelsea, they can afford to have a couple of misses in the transfer window, but they rarely do. And obviously, we haven't gotten to see a lot of Macario, but she was the game winner for Chelsea. She got her first goal when she came back from injury after a few minutes, came on and did the business again today. Again, bit of a lackluster game. Understandable given the strains that are on Chelsea at the moment and the amount of games they have coming up, but they got the job done. So yeah, I don't know what else there is to say about this. Everton, they've been very competitive all season given kind of the injuries they've come up against and the resources they have, and they did compete against Chelsea in this game. But was there a bit of inevitability that Chelsea would find a way to get over the line, Amy?
Yeah, I think as soon as Emma Hayes turned to her bench and you saw Lauren James coming on, Caroline Macario coming on, it must have been a bit of a, not sort of like a, you know, a dampener for Everton, but it's just like, wow, the job is really not done yet. We, you know, I think they were really good. I think the first, Natalie Bourne hit the bar in the first 5 minutes for Chelsea, but after that, Everton were really good. Catherine Cole tested Musovic, you know, there was that free kick that Musovic tipped onto the bar. Like they were so close to scoring, and you really thought, oh my god, they could nick it here. Then Caterina Macario and Lauren James and all those names come on, and Macario scores. And I mean, yeah, I think they didn't need to put in a performance really, Chelsea. They just needed to win after that City game was so demanding, and no Myra Ramirez, and they just needed to grind it out. But it's a bit of a kick in the teeth for Everton, but I think a kind of another sign that they're moving in the right direction, and they've really kicked on this season after a difficult.
Yeah, because they were, you know, they're just a team that had so much turnover of players, and we spoke about how long it would take them to bed in, and last season was very like that, but they seem a more settled outfit this year. But Alan, I suppose, again, the difference, we spoke about Taylor leaving it too late to use his bench. Hayes was able to afford to make those changes, but then she obviously still wanted to win. She put them on early enough to make an impact, and they did that. And, you know, the quadruple is still potentially there for them. Emma Hayes wants to leave a massive legacy she already has done. So I think that showed that the FA Cup is still important to her, which is good as well.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, she does saying that she doesn't care about the quadruple, but if you don't care about the quadruple, let's say you don't stick on Lauren James and Macario there at all, you know, maybe you just wait it out and see what happens. But yeah, definitely she's clearly trying to go for that. And I know James was saying post-match that it is something that the players are trying to band together, and I suppose that kind of rhetoric of doing it for her. And yeah, they're competing on all those fronts. That is affecting them, though. Like you mentioned, you know, they were kind of sluggish, and you could see that in them, certainly. But I suppose if you're trying to go for all of them, you have to sort of space out where you're playing, which players. And Emma Hayes was definitely trying to do that. Just to say as well, Heather Payne, I thought, was brilliant in this game. Really kind of led it up for Everton, and even had that penalty call. I don't think it was, but she definitely was one to watch in it. And yeah, they had a hard time keeping her quiet. They did manage it in the end. But yeah, Emma Hayes will have been happy to slide through that one just about, even if it did take a little bit of a toll on them.
Yeah, I think that just the squad depth that they have is so, so important. And obviously they've got Ajax coming up, Amy. Really on paper, we see Chelsea coming through this. She talks about the schedule and all that, but can you see anything other than Chelsea coming through that Champions League tie?
Yeah, I mean, there's no pressure on Ajax. And obviously they came through a really good group, Roma and Bayern Munich knocked out and them going through. So they're no stranger to kind of causing upsets and there's no pressure on them. I think the second leg being at Stamford Bridge is a big deal because Chelsea can afford to come out of that first leg in Amsterdam, you know, having not won the game, and they can back themselves to go back home. And I think that run when Chelsea got to the final of the Champions League, they were really good in between legs. You know, I think they quarterfinals and semifinals, if memory serves, they lost the first leg and, you know, came back and won the second leg. And it was quite a rare feat to do back then. So I think that's quite a benefit for them. And I think over two legs, it should be fine for them. But yeah, you can see the schedule kind of taking its toll. Kerr's already out, Fischl's out, Moreira's didn't play at the weekend. They just need to kind of, Hayes needs to try and kind of balance that and make sure that the players are as fresh as possible. And it's not an easy thing to do because you mess up the chemistry and stuff as well. But it should be a good time. I'm excited for it.
Well, if anyone can handle the pressure, it is surely Emma Hayes. So thank you so much for covering all things FA Cup with us this week, Amy. That is it for us. The Koi Gig Pod on OTB is in association with Cadbury, official snack partner to the Republic of Ireland's national team. If you want to get in touch with us, you can tweet us at the Koi Gig Pod or email thekoigigpod@offtheball.com. Kathleen will be back gracing us with her presence next week. So for now, thank you, Alana, and we shall see you all next Tuesday.
The Koi Gig Pod on Off the Ball in association with Cadbury, official snack partner of the Republic of Ireland Women's National Team.